I know you're producing today's show, and I thank you for that, but I'm about to do something that's without seeking your approval. I want you to stay on the air with us, but I want you to hand this to Rabbi Uri Pulichowski, because you have, first of all, he's a member of your family. So we could we could expand the conversation about family and our concern for family during this time, because obviously Uri's daughter Tamima is married to my son Yehoshua. And did you ever hear the story about their communication on Shemini Atzeres? You never heard that story?
No. Made the newspapers.
I'm going to have Rabbi Pulichowski tell that story in a second. But also, what you just said about the inevitable feeling that there is a breach in security in the state of Israel. Rabbi Uri, had quite a post this week, and that was the reason. He was just on the air, but I invited him back because of something that he wrote, and we'll discuss that in a moment. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Hope your family's well.
Thank God.
We were just discussing how all of us have somebody serving somewhere, know people who have been suffering over the last couple of weeks, families that are sitting Shiva, and of course those who are being held hostage. I don't know how they and their families are making it through this time, but my gosh, we pray for them, of course. And let's start with this story, because honestly, it's got a great human interest angle to it, and then we'll get back to the very, very serious stuff. Essentially, let me update you. You want to know what your nephew and niece were doing on Shemini Atzeres, right? Like I've been asking you, you know, what was it like in Beit Shemesh when half the world's being called up to war? What was your niece and nephew doing on Shemini Atzeres? And the answer is they were in Bell Harbor helping out the rabbi and the community to make it a beautiful Shemini Atzeres Simchas Torah. And Rabbi Pulichowski and his family are sitting here knowing that they must be very concerned as this news was leaking out. I remember 2-day Yuntif for us. Right. I don't know if you remember that from your days in the United States.
No,
you
really?
Remember? Yeah, we have two days.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we laugh about this, but his youngest son never even knew that there were 2 days in the diaspora. But anyway, I'm not even sure if Moshe Pulichowski knows. But anyway, so they're concerned that they're probably concerned as they continue to hear, because that's what it was like on Shabbos and Sunday. The news was slowly coming out into all the different communities. So Uri, tell us what happened.
So we knew that as much as we were concerned about what was happening, so our daughter and son-in-law, Yehoshua, would also be very, very nervous and have 2 days until they could find out. And there's no way they can get in touch with us, but there's nobody there that can make that phone call. So I had to figure out a way to get news to Tamim and Yehoshua that we were okay. So how do you go about doing that when it's Yom Tov Rishon there, it's Motzi Shabbat here, and all Shabbat afternoon I'm racking my brains. I know Tamima is going to be freaking out the all Shabbos and Yom Tov the next day. So I said, okay, who could get a message over there? Who does messaging, right? So I figured a non-kosher restaurant does deliveries. So we looked at the nearest so then I had to figure out what shul they were at. Right. I don't know what shul they're at. So I called Gavri. I asked Gavri if he knew, right? This is Nachum's son Gavri who's studying here this year. So I called him. He knew, thank God, he knew the shul. So looked up the shul. Then we did a Google Map search of the nearest non-kosher restaurant, called this non-kosher restaurant, said, listen, I'm calling from Israel. I don't know if you've seen the news, but we just went to war and my daughter is a block away from you and we need to get a message to her, and she's an Orthodox Jew, so she won't be checking the news, she won't be able to call us, and I'll pay you, I don't need any food delivery.
The same you pay for an Uber service,
right,
he was probably
right,
to pay
right,
for
right,
a message.
Instead of food, just send the message.
Just send the message,
that's
all.
Great.
So she said, of course we'll do it, no charge, obviously.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I'm going to send my friend over right now. So she sends this non-Jewish woman, delivery person, who walks in and only sees men. Yeah, because right. So now it turns out, by a crazy coincidence, the janitor of the shul used to work at the restaurant. So she knew him. So she said, okay, take this message. He said, I'll give it after services are over, I'll give it to the rabbi. And that's how one thing led to the other.
Amazing.
And the message got across. And I called the restaurant 90 minutes later. So I give you 90 minutes. Called them 90 minutes later. And they said, yeah, told them about the janitor and everything. And then after, 2:30 in the morning here in Yom Tov, Shani was over finally. It seemed like a marathon.
It was a marathon.
Right.
It always is, by
right,
the way.
Right. I remember the days. So 2:30 in the morning, I set my alarm, called Tamima, and she said that she had gotten the message and that she was calm, as calm as you could be, but calm that at least she knew we were okay.
And the two news sources that paid attention to this, there was one in print, right? There was a newspaper.
Well, it's called Rockaway Times.
Right, and then you had a TV station.
A TV station, but I don't think they ever ran it. I'm trying to figure out if they ever ran it. I don't remember, New York One or something, I don't remember what it's called, but yeah.
Pretty cool,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah. Good story.
And you were wondering why I was so anxious to get you back on the air after we had spoken, and it was the post that you had written about protecting your community. Earlier today, and then Yigal and I have reiterated the conversation to our audience back home, or back in the United States, that we learned that there are a few stark realities that people in diaspora don't realize are going on here. Right. And one of them is now the fear. There's a tremendous lack of security here in the state of Israel. Now, what happened, unfortunately, on Shemini Atzeres could happen, or some form of it could happen anywhere, as you sort of alluded to, if not directly said in your post.
Right, right.
And you said, and I'm paraphrasing,
okay.
You said the terrorists are going to come from Judea and Samaria, your neighbors, and they're going to try to kill us, right? Yeah. You said they're going to come.
Yeah, it's a question of when.
And you will be there armed, because you are armed.
Yes.
You will be there armed, ready to battle them.
We have no handcuffs.
Correct.
Right.
We have no handcuffs.
We only have bullets.
Right. To the bitter end.
Right.
And I'm saying...
It won't be our end.
Right. And I'm
their bitter end.
Correct. And I'm saying to myself, how does a Fairlawn kid...
Yeah. Right.
How does a New Jersey kid... I was raised in New Jersey.
Right.
How does a New Jersey kid get to that level where it's not just a love for Eretz Israel and not just this incredible desire which you have described a million times to your readers and a million times personally for those who stood on your porch in Mitzpeh Yericho, this incredible love for the land of Israel and the people of Israel. How is it that you develop this incredible feeling to defend, as you say, till the enemy's end, to defend your city, to defend your nation, to defend your children, until the enemy's end?
I think it's important just to clarify two things before I answer your question. Number one, we're not scared. We don't have fear. We're concerned. There's no one scared. We're not scared of our enemies. We can defeat our enemies, and we're stronger than them, and we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu on our side, and we're not worried. So we're not fearful. We're concerned more than we were before, because we recognize the fact that a lot of our own defense is going to be on our own. That's number one. Number two, it's not that I'm going to defend our town. We have a security team that will defend our town. They're trained. I'm not trained. I don't know anything. These guys have been in combat units. I have a gun, right, but untrained. I did take some classes to make, you know, just to improve myself a little bit.
Well, you're boosting our confidence, Yuri. Right.
So, anybody who walks through my door is going to have an issue. But our security team will, I'm confident, will make sure they never get to my door. We have a security team which is highly funded by a lot of people probably listening to this broadcast, have especially in the last couple of weeks have really chipped in. We've improved our abilities, improved our tactical gear.
And this is one city in Israel.
This is just one small town. We're not even a city. Right. One small town. But all of us are up against this. Where I live in a place called Mitzpeh Yericho. We have 23,000 Palestinians that live in Yericho. They're currently rioting every single day. The army is keeping that. These are things that don't make the news. And it's not just Yericho. This is happening all over the Judea and Samaria, what the world calls the West Bank. And they're getting ready. This is not because they're morally better people than the people of Gaza, and that's why they haven't attacked. The people in Gaza attacked because the opportunity presented itself. They recognized the weakness and a vulnerability. They're waiting for our weakness and our vulnerability, and we're making sure that we don't have one. So that they won't attack and we can deter the attack before. But they've tried. They've tried many, many, many times, and we've put that down. And we'll put it down in the future.
Wow. There are things that you see and hear from your home that happen in Yericho.
Yeah.
Now that these riots and demonstrations are taking place, do you hear those from your home?
We hear gunshots. We can hear gunshots, definitely.
One way they demonstrate.
That's one way. It's also one way they celebrate, right? So that's for sure. But there are news reports of what goes on in Yericho. We have soldiers that come and report. They're on duty there. And this is going on throughout. It's not just us. It's going on throughout. And the world is not reporting on that because how much bandwidth can you take up with news from Israel? So you've got Gaza to report on, and you've got Hezbollah to report on, you've got Iran, and now Yemen last week, right? Houthis fired at us. So there's only so much you could talk about, before you just run out of print space. So the world is not paying attention to what's going on here. It's just, I don't know how much your listeners are interested in this, but the Jack Lew, the ambassador nominee, so during his hearings, his confirmation hearings, a number of senators brought up the situation in Judea and Samaria, in the West Bank, and brought up their concerns over making sure that it doesn't spill over to them. So they're aware. The American Senate is aware. They understand the situation. But the news is not interested, and I'm glad. Let's not, we don't have to draw their eyes to other areas.
So now we'll wrap up by you answering my first question.
Oh,
so
yes.
How does a Jersey kid get this type of attitude?
So look, I was raised in a very Zionist home. You know my parents very well. You've known them almost as long as I have. So my parents were a tremendous Zionist part. We were brought up in Rabbi Yudin's Fairlawn, which is an incredible Zionist community. From very early, he had us connected to a little yeshiva called Ma'on, which we supported. You know, and I remember my
senior the shul supported.
Oh yeah, that was our adopted town. And I remember Rabbi Yudin, my senior year in high school, I remember I flew out with my father to dedicate a library in Ma'on. Ma'on's like in the middle of, like, you know, Mitzvah Yericho, people think it's in the middle of nowhere. Ma'on's really in the middle of nowhere. And then I lived here for 8 years, and everybody I've come in contact with has been a big Zionist. This is our home. That's what I was taught from a very young age. This is home. And whether
that,
you decide to
leap,
live in home.
That leap from Zionism to I will make sure to shoot any enemy.
Right, well, no, so I'm not letting anybody take us out of our home, you know, and this is, things get real very quickly. It turns into from a rally, you know, from the Salute to Israel Day parade to when you've got, you know, look, I never got to serve in the army. There are people that you're making me out to be like some Rambo guy that's defending the state of Israel's dependent on my shoulders. I'm a nobody. I'm a nothing. There are soldiers that are on the border now that we're dependent on for our safety and security like we've never been before. And these are people that are our heroes. It's almost like a joke. The questions, you know, in terms of making me seem like I'm somebody. My love of Israel is nowhere near the dedication that our soldiers have,
and they are willing to give their young lives for it.
And hopefully, we're going to try to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right.
But that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is they take out our enemies, they rescue the hostages, and they bring peace and justice to the Jewish people, and victory.
Wonderful to see you. The one thing I did know before I shake your hand,
okay,
and thank you, the one thing I neglected to ask you the last time you were on, we spoke about your approach when speaking to American students. Are you getting any interesting feedback from the American students? Are they asking you questions and you're like, wow, that's actually an insightful question about the situation that's going on?
Yeah,
here.
I mean, there are different angles that an American student sitting in a classroom is thinking of that Israelis aren't thinking of. We're very much in the moment,
Bayinyan,
right? So they're, you know, so they're able to take a broader perspective, but they're thinking a lot of post the war. Now, they're assuming we're going to win the war, and they're not worried about so much what's going to happen in the meantime, but they're worried about what happens the day after the war. That's something that we're not paying too much attention to. They want to know what Israel's going to look like after the war. You know, are we going back into Gaza? Are we going to be able to visit? Like, you know, are we going to have, you know, on the beach resorts in Gaza that they can go go visit? You know, like we used to have.
Yeah.
You know, like they want to know if how are we going to stay secure? How is this not going to happen ever again? How can we secure our border? You know, that's a lot of the questions I'm getting from American students that are different. How are we going to protect the hostages? You know, how are we going to save them if we do a ground invasion? How can we assure that we're going to get all the hostages?
They ask good questions.
Yeah.
And as we heard today, there are people on the political left who are talking about being on the beaches of Gaza at this point.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's transformed a lot these last couple of weeks.
It's we'll much different.
Right. Yeah, to say the least. Rabbi Uri.
Thanks for having me.
Tadar Abba, great to see you. Thanks for being here. Rabbi Uri Pulichowski, of course. If you want him, by the way, if you want, what email address should we give out? Because there are schools in the United States that would benefit from your free service of sharing all this information with the students.
It's very easy. My email address is Uri, U-R-I, at NBN, Nefesh B'Nefesh, NBN.org.il.
That's
it. Send me an email. I'll speak at your school, and I don't charge.
Amazing. Incredible. The Board of Trustees at these schools will be thrilled to hear that.